Good morning. Today's topic is going to be how to write a halachic will. We discussed over the past few weeks the Seder HaYerusha, the default, if a person does not do any estate planning, he does not write a tzavah, how his estate is distributed. We then discussed the Isser of Avuri Achsanta, that many cases it is usher to change the Seder HaYerusha. We went through the Gedorim, when it's usher, when it's mutter. And today our question is, when a person determines he does want to change the Seder HaYerusha, he does it, he's doing it in a way where there's no Isser involved, in a practical sense, how does one change who his Yerushim are? Now, this is a vital question, because most of our wealth gets passed down eventually from one generation to the next. And it's important to make sure that when the time comes for the Yerusha to happen, when the estate will be passed on to the next generation, we have to make sure the right people will get it. Most people today write a civil, either a will or a trust. They do their estate planning by an attorney. And just determining whether a civil will or a trust is meaningful in halacha is really a vital question. If it's not, if our conclusion would be that nechasim go b'yerusha, a will will not change anything, then most assets around today are probably stolen. Because if a person writes a will and gives the nechasim to his wife or to his daughter, people who alpi halacha are not yerush. So alpi halacha, the yerushim would get it, and the legal beneficiaries that take possession of it would have it b'gzeila. It would be also to buy it from them to have any hanah from it, and it would create tremendous problems. So the discussion that we have today is A, alpi halacha, how does one transfer his estate, and B, what is the halachic ramification of writing a civil will or a trust? Now, we're not going to get to everything today, but Amir Tashem, between this week and next week, we'll cover all these topics. Now, as we explained last week, in halacha, if a person has an asset, he wants to transfer it, you need a kinyan. You have to do a ma'isa kinyan, a specific act, meshicha, hagbah, shtar, chazaka, sudur, there are many types of kinyanim, but you have to do a formal act to transfer the ownership. Simply a verbal statement or an agreement, I'd like you to have this thing, is nothing. It's dvarim ba'alma, while there is the concept of mechusar amana, you give your word, you certainly should carry through, you should honor your word, but it itself is not something which is enforceable. And if a person says, you know, I'd like you to have something, and then later he dies, if he, in the absence of a ma'isa kinyan, al pi pashtus, the item, the ownership does not change. Now, based on this, the simplest way, if a person wants to do halachic estate planning, and he wants to give the assets to people other than his yarshim, the simplest way to do it would be to do an actual ma'isa kinyan. Now, different kinyanim for different assets. We pointed out last week that most people that do their estate planning do it well, at least they do it when they're younger. And therefore, what's typically done is there's a kinyan of guf mehayom peres lachar misa. The testator keeps a lifetime estate for himself. He keeps the use and the peres for his entire life. But he gives the guf mehayom, he gives the actual item right away. And that way, since the kinyan happened at the time that he writes this tzavah, then it'll be binding in halacha. Typically, people will add a tnayim lo yachzor bi. People who do their estate planning, especially when they're younger, want to retain the right to change their minds later. If you make a kinyan today, you give away your assets, it's too late, it's gone. So it's given away, the kinyan is conditional. It's lo yachzor bi. If I don't change my mind, then from today and on, I'm making a kinyan, a guf mehayom in peres lachar misa. But the person retains the right to back out, and this is what many people, when they write a tzavah, it includes this kind of language. Now, the limitation of doing this is that you can only make a kinyan on something that you actually have. So any assets that are in your possession you want to give away, you want to make a kinyan today, you certainly could do that. But the problem is, if a person is doing his estate planning when he's younger, every time he buys another property, every time he sells something, he really would have to redo the kinyan. This is not very practical. People want to go to their attorney or to their rav as little as possible. And therefore, you know, in a practical sense, if a person does not know or a person's assets will be changing, this approach is quite limited. Now also, the reality is, today, very few people actually make kinyanim. They go, they write a civil will, and the question is there a basis in halacha to honor a will when in the absence of a kinyan? When it's just a document, when it's just instructions, and a kinyan was never made. So before we actually answer this question, we're going to have to go through, there are about a half a dozen or so different concepts or different reasons why you can honor a person's instructions. We're going to go through them one by one and go through some of the limitations and some of the parameters. And then at the end, we'll get back to a civil will and see how it applies, whether a civil will be enforceable in halacha or not. The first and most famous concept is the idea of matnas shchiv meira kiksuvim v'chim surim dami. What that means is, it's actually two separate halachos, but we'll go through them one by one. But what it means is, a shchiv meira, someone who is seriously ill. So divrei shchiv meira, the words of a shchiv meira, even though it's just words, if he says, I'd like to give away my assets, I'd like to give this property to a specific person. So divrei shchiv meira, the words of a shchiv meira are kiksuvim v'chim surim dami. It's as if they were written and handed over. It's as if a shtar, as if an appropriate kinyan was made. Now the reason for this is that if a person is a shchiv meira, he's seriously ill, he's dying, he's very often people in that condition are concerned what will be la'achar misa. They have specific ideas how their estate should be given out. So if at that point we tell them, okay, you have to make kinyanim, you have to bring in a whole bezdin, they start doing mashicha, hagbah, sudr, writing shtaris. So nevertheless, the person is in bad enough health as it is, bringing in a dayan could just totally finish him off. So Chazal made a takana shlatitra of daitai in order to calm him down. They said, your devarim, your verbal instructions itself are sufficient. We dispense with any of the formalities that you normally need, and whatever instructions are given are binding. Now, if a person is a shchemera, if a person does his estate planning while he's terminally ill and ultimately dies from the sickness, this concept will apply. And even in the absence of a kinyan, his words will be binding in halacha, it will be enforceable, you do not need anything else. There are, however, a number of problems with using this concept. The first is that by a regular shchiv meira, you have to give away everything. This halacha is specifically for a person who's making his final plans, he's giving away all of his assets. Once he starts leaving things for himself, he doesn't give it all away, then we say, you know, we see the person is not so concerned about dying. If he was really planned on dying, he'd give everything away. There's no point in leaving anything for himself. And therefore, the concept of matnas shchiv meira typically will not apply unless you give away all of your assets. The second point is, there's a practical issue, is that although a shchiv meira does not need any kinyan, he doesn't need any shtar, you will, however, need evidence that he actually gave this matana. If a person calls in his child, or even his children, before he dies, and starts telling them what to do with their assets, the children are all kroivim, they're all related, they are pasul eidus, and if there's any issue, or if there's any question afterwards, if there's one child that wasn't there, there's no way to prove what actually happened, and in a practical sense, you're going to have a hard time enforcing this halacha. Now, another limitation to matnas shchiv meira is that matnas shchiv meira is a special takana. Because the person is dying, we do not want to force him to go through the formalities, and whatever he says works. However, if he tries to make a kinyan, if he has the presence of mind to go ahead to write a shtar, to start making kinyanim, that will make things worse. Because that demonstrates he's okay, he's not relying on this takana, he's relying on the kinyan, he's relying on the shtar. And if the shtar or the kinyan are done incorrectly, it's la'achar misa, it has any of the many problems that could come up, the takana of matnas shchiv meira will not apply. Lastly, is that you have to be very careful what language a shchiv meira uses. Because depending on the language, there are two completely separate halachos which can, you know, drastically change things. This takana, that whatever a shchiv meira says goes, is when a shchiv meira gives a present. He says, I'm giving a present, I would like to give this and this to someone. He uses a Lashon Matana. However, if he uses a lashon of Yerusha, if he uses a lashon of inheritance or bequeathing, something which implies Yerusha, that does not go into this rule of matnas shchemira. For that, there is a separate halacha. This is halacha of it's lundav hayu b'yam anchila yisbanov. There is if you use a lashon of Yerusha, a lashon of inheritance, a shchemira has the ability to change between the yarshim. You can change who gets what. In other words, if you have a few sons, if you use a lashon Yerusha, you can make one son get more than another. But if you use a lashon Yerusha and try to give nechasim to someone who is not a yoyrish, that will not work. So we have to be very careful about the language. If you're shifting assets between yarshim, there are a bunch of sons, or there are a bunch of, you know, or if a person doesn't have sons, he only has daughters. You want to shift between the daughters. There, a lashon Yerusha will work by a shchemera. However, if a person has sons and he wants to give something to the daughter, or if a person has sons, he wants to give something to his wife, you know, besides for the ksuba, there, if he uses a lashon of Yerusha, that will not work. According to the chinuch, it will actually be usher even to try to do so. So in such a case, a lashon matana will be okay if you give it as a present, if it's there as a gift, but if the language used is a lashon of Yerusha, you will have a problem. It will not work if the beneficiary, if the recipient, is not actually a yoyrish. Now this is the concept of a matnas shchemira. It applies to someone who is seriously ill, he's too sick to leave his house. The next level, if a person is literally on their deathbed, they're dying, or they say specifically, I'm giving it because they expect to die, there the halachas are a little bit more relaxed. There the concept of matnas shchemira applies, but even if you only give away part of the assets, you don't give away everything, by mitzvah machmas misa, that will be fine. A bari, someone who is healthy, who says, I'm giving away my assets because I expect to die, or in contemplation of death, there, according to the Ramah, according to most Paiskim, the concept of Shchemira or Mitzav Machas Misa will not apply, and he will need an actual kinyan. There is a Shitas Maram that anyone, even a healthy person, if he specifically writes, I'm giving this present because I expect to die in contemplation of death, Maram holds that does not need a kinyan. Based on this Maram, basically any will be effective. Because a will by definition that says, I'm giving this because I expect to die, that is a mitzvah machas misa according to the Maharam. That would be effective even without a kinyan, even if you're giving away part of the assets. However, most poskim disagree with Maharam. Most poskim limit this only to a person who's terminally ill. A person who's healthy would need the regular requirements of a kinyan. No, it's worse. Shchemira is a person who's ill, he can't leave his house. There, as long as he gives away everything, what he says is binding. Mitzvah Machas Mitzvah, which is either he was sick for 3 days or he's mamish on his deathbed, there, even if he only gives away part of his assets, it's still binding like mitzvah l'kayim, like a matnas shchemira. Maram comes and says a tremendous chiddush. He says Mitzvah Machas Mitzvah doesn't have to be someone who is terminally ill. Even a healthy person, if he says at the time of the gift, I'm giving this only because I expect to die, I'm giving this Achar Misa, then Maram has a chiddush that will work even by a bari, but most places can reject Maram, most places can learn that you have to be even sicker than a shchemira, not a bari. According to Maram, yes. If he's mitzava machmas misa, he's thinking about his death, and you know, I'm specifically giving this gift. It's estate planning. By definition, according to Maram, that would not need a kinyan. But again, Ramah clearly rejects it. Most poskim argue it is a shita. It is a tziruf, which we'll get to when we get back to civil wills. But you know, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it seems that this is nitcha from halacha. Okay, so there's a discussion about Yotze B'Koyler, different cases, how far it goes. But again, it's for another time. There are different Gedarim. Even if a person's sick, if a person he's strong enough to walk around, but he knows he's terminally ill, that there's a whole discussion in the Paiskim. It's, you know, not for now. No, it will not. Will not, because it's a kinyan. Kinyanim do not work on something which is loy ba'loy, marein b'shusay. So this is the concept of a Shchemira. Now, in the discussion of estate planning, Shchemira is not especially helpful, because most people doing estate planning are doing it when they're younger. They're Baruch Hashem healthy. At least that's what they should be doing. And therefore, Shchemira usually will not play a role. After the fact, you know, you do have cases where a person didn't do estate planning until he was mamish dying. There, the concept will come up. You'll have to deal with it. But as far as Alechad Chila, since people are generally doing it well in advance, unless you go follow this Maram, the concept of Shchemira will not help us for our estate planning. So now let's try another concept. A person writes his will, or he gives instructions what he wants to do, and he does. There was no kinyan. There's no kinyan. L'chayra, there's no, it's not binding. No one has to follow it. What about the din of Kibbutz? A father says, this is what I want. I want all the assets to go to my spouse, to my wife. Now, again, we discussed the wife is not a Yairish, there's a Ksuba, that was a discussion 2 weeks ago. But can the sons say, we're the Yarshim, Api Halacha belongs to us? Or can we say, no, there's a Chiv of Kibbutz Av. Your father said he wants these things to go to his wife or nephew, whoever the instructions were. Al Kibbutz Av, you have a Chiv to honor whatever instructions there are in the will. Now here there are a few problems with relying on the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av. The first is that Kibbutz Av is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah zaseh ma'an schar b'tzidoy. Like many other mitzvahs zaseh, where it's ma'an schar b'tzidoy, it's not enforceable. So even if there is a chiyuv of Kibbutz Av, the same way the father tells his child to clean up the room, he has a chiyuv to do that. But Beis Din is not going to come knock on the door and force the child to clean the room. It's a mitzvah. He should be doing it. He has a chiyuv to do it. But if he doesn't, there's nothing that Beis Din can do. They cannot step in and force him. If a person is going to rely on Kibbutz Av to have his children honor the will, so it's very nice if his children are taka, yoru shemayim, and will listen. But if they choose not to, if they refuse to, there's no way to force them because it's not a kinyan, it's just a mitzvah. But besides that, there are some fundamental problems with applying Kibbutz Av to a will. We all know that Kibbutz Av is Mishel Av. If a person's hungry, and he tells his son, please get me something to drink. Okay, so you're in the parent's house, the son goes to the parent's refrigerator, takes a drink, brings it to the father. There, that's a chiyuv of Kibbutz Av. On the other hand, if a father says, I'm hungry, it's true the son has a chiyuv to go feed him, but he's allowed to use the father's credit card. The halacha of Kibbutz Av is Mishel Av. The father has to pay the expenses. The son has to go ahead and actually do the action. So anytime there's a mitzvah of Kibbutz Av where there's an expense involved, the son has the right to say, I'll do it. I have a mitzvah of Kibbutz Av. But the father, the parent, has to pay for it. The son does not have to spend his own money for the father's kibbutz. Now if the father is poor, we mentioned when we went through Hilchus Tzedaka, in Hilchus Kedima, the person's first priority is to support his parents. But in the absence of it being a chiv tzedakah, we're not talking about aniyim, it's just a question who pays the bill. The halacha is the parent, al tzkibbutz av, he can ask the child to help him, but the expense has to be paid by the parent. Okay, good. We'll get to that. So based on this, many achrayim say, when it comes to Hilchos Yerusha, let's say a person dies. Al pi din, who gets the nechasim? His yarshim, his sons. Now the father said, I want these nechasim to go to my wife, my nephew, to other people. So what are we saying? We're saying the children should have a chiyuv to listen to the father, al tzkibbutz av. The problem is listening is going to cost you money. You're taking these nechasim that you got birusha, and you're giving it to the beneficiary, whoever your father instructed you to. Since the chiyuv Kibbutz Av is Mishel Av, it's only with the father's money. Here, the money no longer belongs to the father. And therefore, some achrayim say, there's no din of Kibbutz Av, because it's costing you money, it's your Yerusha that you're giving away. Now, others argue, Kveger is mitzad, that he says no. He said the din of Kibbutz Av Mishel Av just means that the son doesn't have to take money out of his pocket to do the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av. However, in this case, where the whole Yerusha is coming from the parent, And the parent is just saying, this money that was mine, that you're getting from me, Birusha, I want to channel it, I want you to give it to someone else. There are some Akroinim say, that's called Mishalav. Even though in a technical sense it goes Birusha, since it came from the father, and the mitzvah of Kibbut Av is just saying, don't take the Birusha, just give it out. So many Achroinim say the mitzvah of Kibbut Av will still apply. So the Ktzai says that, and he's actually talking about Mitzvah Mekayim Devarei Emes, which we'll get to. The Ktzai says the Isra Avaris Nachla is when you do something, you make a kinyan, you transfer it. But if you don't make a transfer, you let the children get it and you give them a tzivu, this is what I want you to do. And it's them doing it. If they decide not to, you're not kaifa. In that case, Enoch Nami. In that case, you would not have the Isra of Avurei Aksanta. But in that case, you're at the child's mercy. And there's an afkmin also. There's a very big difference between a kinyan and kibbut av or mitzvah kaim d'varei emes. We'll get to those later. But enochami, if you do it like that, if you just give instructions, you will not have avurei aksanta. I've actually seen there are people who, when they write their wills, because they're concerned about the iser avurei aksanta. So I know someone who specifically wrote a will in a way where it was not binding. He just wrote a letter to his children. This is what I would like you, I'm requesting al tzkibut av, this is what you do. Now, you can only do that if you know your children very, very well. But if you really have confidence that whatever you say will go, in a chami, it avoids the entire issue of avurei aksanta. Yes, yes. There is a discussion, but when a father dies, when he mentions his father's name for 12, but there are different things that you say. It does seem pretty clear there is a mitzvah, there is a chiv of kibbut av. There are some stiras. Rav Akiva Eiger talks about it. There are certain cases the kibbut of a stepmother doesn't apply lachar mitzvah of aviv. But at least in this case, the Rav Akiva Eiger says there would be kibbut av. Again, what is makal? If you look at the Rav Akiva Eiger that discusses it, he specifically deals with Achar Misa. He brings down there are some cases yes and some cases no, and he says in this case it will qualify. Now another issue you have with applying the concept of Kibbut Av is that Kibbut Av, the classic cases, are all direct kavod for the parents. You're feeding them, you're taking care of their needs, you're giving them respect. What happens if father tells a child that, you know, listen, you're going to yeshiva, 6 o'clock every night, I want you to stand in your head for 3 minutes. Is there a mitzvah of kibbut av aim to listen to the parents? So there's a request, there's an order, but it has absolutely nothing to do, nothing that doesn't directly impact the parent at all. So over here, there are some Mar Mekoymis, there's the Rajban, the Ramban, and Yevamos Davov, both write, there's no din of kibbut av. Kibbut av is when it's negiah to the parent. It's their kavod is on the line, giving them to eat, giving them to drink. It's their direct kavod. Telling a child to do something that really has nothing to do with the parent, the parent doesn't get anything out of it, that doesn't help their comfort, it doesn't help their kavod. There, the Rajba says that is the mitzvah of kibbut av does not apply. Now, based on that, yesh ladoin, by a tzava. When a parent gives a tzava, it's not something that directly impacts them. It's instructions what to do with a bunch of assets. The parent is dead already. There's nothing to do with them. And therefore, there's a tzad to say that the mitzvah of kibbut av will not apply. Afabike and Rukiv Eger, after he brings up this point, says that even though perhaps there's no kibbut av, he says, as you pointed out, there's a concept of moira. If the father gave an order and you're disobeying the order, that itself is a bezoyin. That's an embarrassment for the parent. That will violate moira av, and that he says certainly would apply.
What about the person had to give something to somebody specific? In other words, the second you give matches. So there's an involved. The parent would have, not totally unrelated to the parent, like standing on your head. But there is a relationship, a peace of mind for him.
Marsham says a similar svara. He says that this is not standing on your head. This is instructions about assets that belong to the parents. And based on that, Marsham says there would be kibbut av. The counter argument is that at this point, the parent is no longer here. They're not experiencing any hano or pleasure about who gets the asset afterwards, and therefore perhaps not. But again, the Marsham does say your svara. Now, in truth is, there's another very basic problem. And that is, it's one thing if before a parent dies, he calls in a child and says, listen, son, I'm going to die soon. After I die, I want you to do this and this with my assets. So there's a tzivui. He told the son what to do. And therefore, we can have this whole discussion. Is there kibbutz? Isn't there? We can have our whole back and forth. What would be, for example, if the father, before he died, sold his car? Sold his car, made a kenyan, took the money. But when they made the kenyan, something went wrong, and they didn't do the kenyan correctly. After the shiva, the child realizes the kenyan wasn't done. So he calls the buyer and says, listen, I know you just bought a car for my father, but the kenyan wasn't done correctly, so I'd like to undo the deal. Does he have a chiyuv to honor the deal? Is there kibbut ave'im? No. There was no tzivoy. The father didn't tell the son, I want you to sell this car to let this person have the car. The father did a business deal. He made a kenyan. The kenyan didn't work. The car still belongs to the father. The money that he has really belongs to the buyer. And whenever they realized the problem, the father could have backed out. Now the son could back out. Good. Each case, depending on the case, maybe yes, maybe no. But if a person just makes a kenyan betayus, that itself is, the kenyan itself is batal. If he made a commitment, we can talk about his verbal commitment. We can then discuss whether a child has to honor the father's commitment, which is a completely separate sugya. So in a case where, dishlema, if the father told the son, this is what I want you to do, so then we can discuss the concept of whether there is a mitzvah kibbutz or where there isn't a mitzvah kibbutz. Masha'en ken, if he writes a will, which is not instructions to the son, a will is a legal document, it's written to the court, it's written to the executor. Now, it happens to be the children are impacted by the will. But it's not instructions, it's not a tzivoy, it's not something that was given over to the son. There you can argue the concept of kibbut av shouldn't apply at all. Simply because the father tried selling something or tried making a kinyan in a way that was not effective, there would be mitzvah kibbut av. Now again, it's just a svara. One could argue that since it's understood that the will reflects his instructions, and it could be a vizoyan when a child fights the will, arguably it would go back to Rikiv Eger's vart that there's moira. But again, tzarechi and ludina. Now halacha l'maisa, as far as kibbutz av, it's really not so negayan in at least in the context of a bezdin, because since regardless in bezdin mitzvah kibbutz av is not enforceable. Bezdin can't take it into account. The Bezdin cannot force a person even if the mitzvah does apply. Now that being said, as far as if a person wants to know what to do, even although we mentioned a bunch of tzadim why there should not be kibbutz av, kamat all of the poskim say that even if you can say that the mamish there's a chiyuv and the regular mitzvah kibbutz av, when the Torah says kibbutz av, it's going on such cases, kamat all of the poskim say there certainly is an inyan of kibbutz av. If a child wants to know what should he do, should he listen to the will or should he start a family feud, the answer is the concept of kibbutz av certainly does apply, and the right thing to do is listen to the will without making any problems. Whether it's enforceable, again, either way, even if it's pashut, there is kibbutz av, Bezdin can't force it, and therefore, in the context of a din Torah, it doesn't come up. But certainly, if a person is on the receiving end, he wants to know, should I challenge a will? It certainly is a chisaron in respect in kibbutz av for a person to do so. Now, this is the concept. So far, we had two concepts. We have a concept of matnas k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, that if a dying person's instructions are binding even in the absence of a kenyan. And we have the concept of kibbutz av. There's a mitzvah to listen to your parents' wishes. It's not enforceable. There are some technical issues. But everyone agrees, at least conceptually, there is a mitzvah, there's an inyan to listen to the will of the parent. What about dina de malchus dina? Legally, a will is going to be binding. That's the whole point of a will. Will Dina de Malchus Dina make a document or will Halacha recognize a will because of the concept of Dina Malchus Dina? Now this is a tremendous mapecha in the Paiskim. If you look in Simin Reish Nun Gimel Sif Lamed Beis, it seems to be Halacha Mufureshes, Mechaba writes that a tzava that's written by Arkoyis works. Dina Malchus Dina, a legal will work. So we read the Mechaber, so we can stop the shir and go home. Dina Malchus Dina, tzava will work. However, this mechaber is really based on a sugya in the beginning of Gittin, which in Simon Samaches the mechaber talks about it more extensively. And there's a discussion about shtaros that are written in our kodesh. You have a shtar, a legal shtar, that's not written al pi halacha. And there, the Gemara says that if dina machus and dina, if this is a legally enforceable document, it will work in halacha. But there's a tremendous machlokes what kind of document we're talking about. The Mechaber and Simon Samaches paskins that dina machus and dina helps for one thing. If we have a legal document that's signed by witnesses, they're not Jewish, al pi halacha they're pasul eidus. Their word is not enough evidence to do anything. Zok the Mechaber. If it's a dina machus adina, if this is a formal court that's recognized by the government, there we can assume any document there is true. We're not as long as they have a good reputation, they're not known to take bribes. So you can assume if the document is there, it's recorded in court, you can rely on such a document. But it's there only as evidence. It's evidence that this is what the person said. This is what the person did. He made a kinyan. It was a matan shchemira. You want to know what happened? We can rely on those documents. However, zok the mechaber, and the smile over here in Rishon Gibel speaks this out. A legal document will only work when a kinyan was made, or it's a case of matan shchemira. We don't need a kinyan. So we can then rely on their document as evidence that this is really what happened. In the absence of a kinyan, if the procedures that are needed al pi halacha were not followed out, there the mechaber paskins we will not rely on a legal document. The Ramban in Simon Samaches argues, he uses the shtar even for a shtar kinyan, but even so there's a discussion whether the shtar itself has to follow the guidelines or the rules of halacha or not. Al pi halacha, there are a number of poskim that discuss dina machus adina. The Rivash says that any, and there's Ritvaz also, that any legal document, a legal will be binding because of dina machus adina. However, other poskim argue, they say if a kinyan was not made, dina machus adina will not help. And they really add, there's another technical problem, which is like this. It's one thing to say dina machus adina can create a kinyan. But when a person writes a will, when is a will effective? A will is only effective when the person dies. The moment the person dies, who owns the assets? The yorshim. So even if dina machus adina can create a kinyan, you can only make a kinyan, you only give away something that you own. If this kinyan is taking place after the person dies, at that point, it's not his anymore. A kinyan won't help. And if a kinyan won't help, a kinyan created by dina machus adina can't help either. And therefore, many poskim say, even if we'll accept dina machus adina, because it takes effect only after the person dies, it's too late. And a will cannot work as a kinyan simply because it's not yours to give out. Good, so like this. If you write a will that's effective legally, we could talk about dina machus adina, and if the poskim that follow dina machus adina, we'll honor it. But if you're going to write a language that doesn't work with bidinehem, and doesn't work bidineinu, you're stuck. L'kulayam. So if you make a kinyan shach as kodemisa in a way that al pi halacha it'll work, good. So al pi halacha you have a kinyan shach kodemisa. So if the courts don't like it, so you have their will for their rules. But if you're going to be using the legal will without a kinyan, but you're going to write in a way that in court it's not enforceable, so then l'kulayama it's not going to work. So going back from, so although there are some places that say dina machus adina, that's enough to honor a legal will, others argue since it's lachar misa, dina machus adina cannot help for that. And again, this is another machlokes hapoiskim. There is a very... Oh, very good. So there's a tremendous chiddush from the Igros Moshe. Igros Moshe uses the word dina machus adina, but really he's going with a concept of minhag. As we've discussed a number of times, that although you need a kinyan, there are all sorts of formalities. There's a concept of situmta. Anything which is accepted in the business world as finalizing a deal, that becomes a kinyan. If you're in the diamond industry, you say mazel bracha, it's yours. Situmto, that's an artificial kinyan. So some places can say that if you write a will, forget about dina machusa dina. But if today the practice became the way to transfer your assets is to write a legal will, then that's legara than any situmto. And the same way by mazel bracha, suddenly the diamonds are yours, even though in halacha there's no such thing. But it's a situmto, that's the minhag. So if by writing a will, that's how you transfer assets, that will be a kinyan. Now, it's true, but we have the same problem. If the kinyan only works lachar misa, minhag can't help to give something away that doesn't belong to you anymore. Zog de igros moisha, a tremendous chiddush. He starts off by saying that once you have a legal will, people are going redas, you don't need a kinyan, you know, either minhag or altz gemiras das. You don't have a problem with the ma'isa kinyan. You're giving it away after lachar misa. So Rabbi Yishai Zechidish has something called a shas misa. And he says, when you make a kinyan lachar misa, it's too late. Once you die, it belongs to your yershim. At that point, it's too late for anything to be chal. He has a chiddush that with minog or with situmta, you can create a situation where it happens simultaneous with his death, b'shas misa. And therefore, you no longer have the problem that it's given la'achar misa, and therefore you can rely on minog, and presumably you can rely on dina machus dina as well. Now, this new guideline of shas misa is a tremendous chiddush. Usually people are either dead, and then they're alive, and the next moment they're dead. So for this kinyan to be chal, if it's not chal while he's alive, it's a chal when he's dead. That's by definition la'achar misa. What's this shas misa? But the Gris Moshe does, that's his chiddush. Based on this, the Gris Moshe says every will is enforceable because it's a kinyan b'shas misa. It's a kinyan because that's a minog. It's a kinyan, you can also add al tzedina l'chus adina. And based on the Gris Moshe says, it's a chiddush b'shas misa, and he holds it will work. Fine. So if you look at a will as just instructions to a court, then l'kuliyama in halacha it's not going to help. Because halacha says these are yorshim, these are the ones that get it. Anyone who's trying to uphold a will is trying to say that regardless of the language it's used, regardless of the fact that the form is not consistent with halacha, we're going to look at it as a kinyan. People today understand when they write a will, this is a way to give the assets to their yorshim. So since that's what they understand, that's the minog, that's perhaps the dina machus adina, we're going to use that to try to create a kinyan, which is a chiddush. You can argue and say it's not written the right, it doesn't have the right language, doesn't follow the formality, throw it out. But the point over here is that even if you accept this chiddush, and even if you say it's a kinyan, we have to determine when this kinyan takes place. If legally, everyone understands when you write a will, nothing happens until after he dies, all the kinyanim in the world are not going to help you. You would need a mehayom lachar misa. Something has to start today, and if it's clear from a legal and practical sense, nothing starts today in a legal will, then we're back to the problem, and it won't be meaningful in halacha. Unless we have a chiddush of the Igros Moshe, that's something called shas misa. That's Rav Moshe's chiddush. There is the concept of an estate, but that estate is governed by Hovos Yerusha, and it goes to the Yarshim. The only way to change the Yarshim is we said a Shchiv Meira can go ahead and say one Yarshim should get more than the other, but to take money to channel it to someone who is not a Yarish in Hovos Yerusha does not exist. You need a kinyan, and a kinyan by definition has to at least start before the person dies. Okay, that may depend on the case. I hear. So far, the shiur's not over yet. There is one other sheet, and that was if you go like Maran. That even a bari mitzav machas miso could be effective. That may also help again, but otherwise, until at this point, the only thing we have is this igros moshe. Correct, correct. The discussion of the minhag was not a discussion in the United States. It's going back, there's a Ritvaz, there's a Rivosh, the minhag goes back to in Europe where the process was presumably different. And in Chlami, it is clear actually that the minhagim did evolve, that the facts on the ground evolved. But I agree with you. You know, what you're saying is that it's clear from a legal sense it is not a kinyan. It's certainly not intended to start at all mechayim. It's something that only happens afterwards. It's instructions to a court. And therefore you're saying, you're paskening, throw it out, forget about the estate planning, you should have to do something up yalacha. You get the liability, you just don't get the assets. Right. Okay, great. I understand. The process that it takes to get it released, the fact that you have to go through probate, you have to pay off all the creditors, you have to go through hoops, that the formalities before you get the actual cash doesn't make a difference. The issue is when the actual transfer or when the actual ownership changes. I would imagine when the person... Okay, I'm not going to...
I mean, if there are liabilities, like you said, you have to pay off creditors, how can you go
Well, no. Every time you give a shchimera or mitzvah kandivrei ames, you're not wiping out the creditors. The creditors' rights will survive, but what will happen is the yarshim will get it, and the creditors can now go after the yarshim. There's a lien, exactly. You have the assets along with the assets. If there was a shibud, again, karka metalatul, and there'll be different halachas, but the lien will very often survive the transfer.
And I disagree.
It's a shutfus. I mean, they're shutfim. There are some halachas about tefisas habayis, but it does transfer. It's always owned by somebody. If it's not owned by the
estate is
the yarshim. Correct. Correct. Okay. Fair enough. I'll let the lawyers fight it out after the shiur. So this is the fundamental problem with Minog Dina Machusdina is all this issue. That if the Dina Machusdina is just setting who the Yorshim are, the Torah has another scheme of who the Yorshim are. So if you want to create and somehow say it's a Kenyan that starts Koydim Misa, or Igros Moshe says Beshas Misa, and then there's what to talk about. But if you look at it as just a way of defining who the Yorshim are and everything flows Memela, then you have a serious problem and neither of these concepts are going to help you to enforce a legal will. Now this again leads us back to a problem. If a legal will is not enforceable, the bottom line practice for many years, even Marsham talks about it, and it was a practice then, the bottom line practice was to rely on legal wills. People did not run to Dayanim to write a tzava or shtar chatzi zacher. So what is the basis for this custom? So this leads us to the last concept, which we'll just briefly begin. We'll have to discuss it more next week. And that is, there's a concept of mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames. If a person gives instructions about what to do with his assets, and then he dies, the halach is his instructions have to be followed. It's not a kinyan, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah kaim divrei ames. It's not to do with kibarav, it's really to any yorish. And it's enforceable. This is not just something like kibarav, which a mitzvah is the right thing to do. Bezdin will force someone to honor the wishes of the ames. There are, however, a number of conditions that need to be met. The Mechaber and Ramah both paskin that for this to apply, you need hoshesh lekach. The person has to escrow the money by a third party and say, here, take this money, but after I die, this is what I want you to do with it. If you don't escrow the money, it's just verbal instructions, then the Ramah paskins, it will not work. Okay, so the pratim we'll have to get to next week, but this, of course, leads us back to a problem. When a person writes a will, it's very nice that there are instructions what to do with it, but it's not hoshesh lekach. If you set up a trust and you transfer the assets into a trust with specific instructions, then very likely that is a case of hoshesh lekach. You're giving the assets to a third party with instructions, this is what I want done, l'achar misa. But in the absence of a trust, if you still retain the control of the assets, you're just giving instructions, it will not qualify by the strict letter of the law. And we'll have to discuss next week why civil wills may be different.